Up next on Tapestry, we're spending the day in Lockport, New York. Situated along the Erie Canal in Niagara County, we'll start the day with Christopher Parada at the newly restored Palace Theater.
What I feel that the Palace Theater back in 1925 was representing was truly for the people of the community.
Next, we head to the Erie Canal Discovery Center to meet Charlie Begley and his interpretation of the 20th century muralist Raphael Beck.
He tried to reproduce things so people could see places they couldn't get to.
Finally, a visit to Lockport wouldn't be complete without checking in on the old historic locks.
Now, the gates weigh 10,000 pounds, and they're well balanced, but you're still pushing a gate through water.
That's all ahead on Tapestry, right after this.
Compact Science is your gateway to the science of everything in our region. Join host Sarah Jane Gomlick-Green and investigate the geology of Niagara Falls, discover the chemistry in sponge candy, and learn how density affects lake effect snow. Watch Compact Science on the Buffalo Toronto Public Media YouTube channel.
From in-depth reporting to musical masterpieces, dramas, and mysteries to local bands, Buffalo Toronto Public Media delivers it all. Stay informed, be inspired, and join us. This is Public Media.
Welcome to Tapestry. I'm your host, Lynn Bader. Today, we're headed to Lockport, New York, a place where history isn't just preserved, it's lived. We begin at the heart of the city's art scene, the Palace Theater. During the pandemic, this beloved community landmark underwent a remarkable $4 million restoration. We're here to learn more from Executive Director Christopher Parada and to step inside a space that continues to inspire, entertain, and bring people together. Are you Chris?
I am Chris.
Chris, nice to meet you. I'm Lynn Bader from Tapestry.
Nice to meet you. Thank you for coming.
I hear you're about to celebrate your 100th birthday.
It is. We were born July 18th, 1925. Okay. So in just a little while, it's going to be our big birthday. We're going to have a big celebration. It falls during our summer show, which is a great thing.
Awesome.
And we're just celebrating arts and theater right in our community.
I'd love to go on a little tour and point out things to me that, you know, the average theater goer might not even recognize.
Sure.
Okay,
well, great. Come on in.
Okay.
So being an old vaudeville theater, built in 1925, mm-hmm. like we said, almost 100 years old, you want the ultimate experience. So when a patron walks in the theater, after they park, they see the marquee, the show posters, you have the box office, our will call area where patrons can pick up their tickets and stuff.
Okay.
We did a huge major renovation during COVID. We wanted to restore it back to what it was in 1925. So adding the new elements of LED lights and things like that, but keeping it with the old historic nostalgic feel.
So you hide the modern.
We do.
Okay.
Hide the modern.
Chris provided us a full tour of the entire theater and then sat down with me to talk more about the history of the space and the ongoing efforts to restore it.
Let's go back to the beginning. Go back to 1925. And the palace was described as that it was built not for the aristocracy, but for all the people. What do you think that meant then? And how does that spirit live on today?
I love that quote because what I feel that the Palace Theater back in 1925 was representing was truly for the people of the community. And it did not have to mean that whether you were rich, whether you were poor, or your status of whatever that is, it's for the community. We need to offer certain things for youth and arts education that is at a very affordable price, but also doing different programs that are very high end.
A place like this started out primarily, I would imagine, with performances on stage.
Yes. Yes, it was. It was the comedies, the variety shows, things that you would see like a Carol Burnett, like those variety acts that you would see on TV were performed here. It was something that you couldn't, you know, experience anywhere else. You had to go to the theater to feel one of those unique variety acts.
Let's talk about maybe some of the years that then caused some challenging times for the theater.
You know, what happens to a big million square foot building type of thing, it falls into disrepair where it's closed. You know, in the 70s, it closed for a number of years because it just wasn't working.
How close would you say we came to losing this theater for good?
Pretty close. Because there was a developer that had bought it, which is wonderful, and then realized this is a big job and very, very difficult. And it fell to the wayside. And there was the thought of to just tear it down and put a parking lot. That was a big scare. And the community did not want that.
I'm going to fast forward to about 1999.
Yeah, the developer, Grancelli Development, that owned the building. But we had a local group, you know, where we were like, well, let's try and do a show. DeSales Catholic School, which is right here in the community, did their middle school musical here. They did Annie. And so then we were kind of thinking like, maybe we could do this.
Okay.
And that's where kind of the spark happened. And that's where then in 1999, you know, into 2000, basically right around 2003 is when the not-for-profit was formed.
Now let's talk about the nonprofit.
George Fritz, who is a local businessman, he owns Mills Jewelers here in Lockport, a huge cheerleader of the theater and the community of Lockport. He pledged to the whole community and asked if everybody could donate $6. Simply $6, we could buy the building. In just a couple of months, about 3 months, $350,000 came in.
Wow.
That we raised. We bought the building, and then that's where the not-for-profit started in doing the different programming, arts education. Here we are today.
That early wave of community support set the tone for an authentic restoration.
And during our renovation, we did everything. You name it, from paint, plaster, seats, artwork that you see, all of the different stencil work that's on the ceiling,
wow,
including the murals, was all hand-done. We had artists come in here that had to replicate all of the different scroll work and everything that was the style back in the 1920s.
So 1,100 seats.
1,100 seats. You will notice that you actually can sit in a seat, you know, and your legs are comfortable. By looking at the ceiling and seeing the different artwork and everything that is up here, all of this is original. We had a company called Switech Studios that came in and told us our story. And they had a process where they could melt and dissolve away the top layers of paint. And so they were able to do that to get to the original wall of what it was here in 1925 to tell us what our color palette was. All three murals, the big one on the ceiling and the two on the side, are original. And there's certain things, if we look at the big one,
right,
and we see the guy playing the guitar right on the side here, and then you kind of see like a little castle in the background. All of that was covered up with orange paint back in the day. So they were able to lift that off, clean all of it, and then restore the murals back to what they were.
Incredible.
What has being a part of the Palace Theater's legacy meant to you personally?
After 100 years, I have people that say, I had my first date here. I had my first kiss here. I met my husband here. I met my wife here. I love what I do. And I'm very blessed and fortunate that I get to call this a job because I get to play make-believe every day. I was that theater kid. I used to, my grandparents would take me to Art Park and we'd go to the Pantages Theater in Toronto and see Phantom multiple times. And I remember sitting on my grandma's lap saying, I'm going to do that someday. I didn't know what it was, but I said, I'm going to do that. And I am.
So you're keeping that original quote relevant every single day.
Yes.
It's a theater for everyone.
Yes.
Thank you so much for taking some time with me today. I really appreciate
it. Thank you. Thank you.
Next up, we meet a retired Greek and Latin teacher from the Lockport Public Schools who introduces us to his version of the famous American muralist, Raphael Beck, right after this snapshot of Lockport history.
When you think of firefighting history, Lockport, New York probably isn't the first place that comes to mind. But this canal-side city was home to Birdsill Holly, one of the most important inventors you've probably never heard of. Holly wasn't just an idea guy, he was a problem solver. In 1869, he patented the very first practical fire hydrant, delivering pressurized water on demand. Before Holly, most hydrants relied on gravity-fed systems with not enough pressure to fight a serious fire. His system meant firefighters could act faster, with better tools, and save lives. He also invented one of the earliest dry barrel hydrants, perfect for cold climates, like Lockport, where water left sitting in hydrants could freeze solid. And get this, Birdsill Holly held over 150 patents. He founded Holly Waterworks, bringing modern water systems to cities across the U.S. Even today, his technology forms the foundation of how we fight fires. So the next time you pass a fire hydrant, give a nod to Lockport. and to the quiet genius of Birdsall Holly.
Later this year, the Erie Canal turns 200, and I can't think of a better place to reflect on that milestone than the Erie Canal Discovery Center. Just inside, a sweeping mural captures the canal's grand opening day in 1825. It was painted by artist Raphael Beck a century later to commemorate the canal's 100th anniversary. Today, we meet Charlie Begley, a retired educator and historical reenactor who often portrays Beck at community events, sharing his passion for the past, one story at a time. Charlie, thanks for taking some time with us today. You are a retired Greek and Latin teacher, as I understand it.
Yes, mainly Latin. Okay. All right. I taught Greek probably from about the late or mid early 90s to when I retired from high school teaching. Then I went on to teach at Niagara University from 03 to 23, where I did one section of Latin and Greek.
Well, you're a retired teacher who right. has found a second act as a time traveler.
Yes, I do reenactments. That's how I first got started. The Niagara County Historical Society started a group that was called Step Back in Time. There probably were about a half a dozen to nine of us who played characters. And we rode a trolley through Lockport. We stood in front of houses where characters did things. I play another character where I was in a parking lot where his house was, the man Birdsall Holly. A famous inventor. I got hooked into it because the person who was in charge of it, Diane Copeless, she was excellent, and my wife hooked me into it. And it was hard to say no, and I've been doing it probably for 30 plus years.
Oh. When you play Raphael Beck, you're talking about how this particular mural
right.
has all of your personal touches on it and what the artist was thinking as he created this mural. What else is it that you know about Raphael Beck that you can share with us?
Well, he was born in 1858, age of 20, was sent to Europe, and then he decided when he came back to the United States in the early 1880s, where is he going to go? And he decided to come to Lockport because he wanted to be near Buffalo, which was a center of everything going on because of the canal and the movement west.
Absolutely.
And he settled on Church Street, and he used to take the train every day to the Pearl Street station and to go to his studio.
His studio sat high above Chippewa Street in Buffalo's Calumet Building. His work reached far beyond the region. Beck won national recognition for designing the official emblems for three major world's fairs, including the Pan American Exposition held in Buffalo in 1901, the Louisiana Purchase Exposition in St. Louis in 1904, and the Lewis and Clark Centennial Exposition in Portland in 1905. Charlie was decked out in his 1920s tuxedo, ready to perform, and I wanted to learn a little more about the mural that stood right in front of us.
If you look at the mural, it's the 1825, October 26th opening of the canal, of which the governor, DeWitt Clinton, and other political figures come down in a boat that you see in the background, the Seneca Chief. They come down the Flight of Five. There's the Flight of Five that goes east and the Flight of Five that goes west. These locks were just watered the day before. This is the last part of the canal to truly open in its entire length. Standing on a hillside, or part of the escarpment, is Nathan Roberts with his hand in the air, looking and waving, because he's the guy who came up with how do you get up 60 feet of an escarpment. Next to him is the most adorable little girl you've ever seen, my daughter Phyllis. Mm. She doesn't go back to 1825.
But you had to have her in there.
I had to have her in there. And then if you look, you'll also see in the left-hand corner, what did they give those guys who were digging 4 feet deep across New York State and 40 feet wide to get them doing it more each day? You got your own quart of whiskey. The water of life. Why? Because you don't drink canal water.
I've got another question about Raphael Beck for you. As a painter, a muralist, a sculptor, and a teacher himself, What is it that you admire most about him as an artist?
The fact that he tried to reproduce things so people could see what could have been there, and also to take people to places they couldn't get to. Kind of chills me a little bit thinking about it.
It chills me thinking about it. What an incredible symbol.
Yeah.
Of innovation and
right.
ingenuity. Thank you so much for
No problem.
Having taking some time with me today and
But I thought you were going to speak Greek to me.
Bringing Raphael along for the ride. Greek, it's all Greek to me.
Well, let me teach you one thing in Greek.
Okay.
You say yassas.
Yassas.
That's hello in Greek. So
yes.
If you go to the Greek festival, you'll be able to say that.
How do I say thank you?
Thank you in Greek is ευχαριστώ.
Ευχαριστώ.
It's one thing to see history on a wall. It's another to watch it in motion. When we come back, we'll head to the historic locks themselves, where a dedicated group of volunteer lock tenders are bringing the canal's past to life, one demonstration at a time. There's more Tapestry coming up. Stick around.
Explore the Underground Railroad's final stop. Learn about how the Latine workforce organized to overcome discrimination and follow the timeline of immigration in Western New York.
So remember, history surrounds you and includes you.
Watch Compact History on the Buffalo Toronto Public Media YouTube channel.
From your morning commute to quiet evenings at home, Buffalo Toronto Public Media is always there. With trusted news, inspiring stories, and timeless music, it's your connection to a world of wonder. This is Public Media.
Welcome back to Tapestry. I'm your host, Lynn Bader. To wrap up our Lockport episode, we meet two volunteers who help visitors experience something extraordinary. Not just a piece of local history, but an engineering marvel that changed the course of a nation. Here along the historic Erie Canal flight of five locks, the gates open and close, causing the water to rise and fall, just as it did two centuries ago, thanks to an army of volunteers and lock tenders like Dave Chatt.
In 1842, the locks that we're going to operate opened up. They were the westbound locks. There were two sets of five. The eastbound locks were taken out when the barge canal locks were put in. So if you think about it, we're going to operate locks that really haven't had much activity in 100 years. So we're bringing that back to life.
For those people who maybe didn't grow up in Western New York and know about the Erie Canal, but don't understand the engineering marvel that the lock system is, what is a lock and how does it work?
Well, when they were digging the original canal,
they
got to Lockport. What they hit was the Niagara Escarpment, which runs literally from Wisconsin all the way through Ontario and through Western New York. In Lockport, it's about a 70-foot elevation change. So they needed to figure out, how do we get boats from the lower level to the upper level and vice versa? So they designed a stair-step set of locks to do just that. And then they dug through what we call the deep cut, which is a section of canal that's roughly 6 or 7 miles long that's cut through limestone so that they could be at the level of Lake Erie. And it took 2 years to build the locks to go from Lockport to the last literally 14 or 15 miles.
With an escarpment that literally ran right through it.
Yeah, they had to basically climb a cliff.
Talk to me about how it works. It looks a little bit like an elevator, if you will, for a boat.
Well, that's exactly right.
Okay.
It is. And the beauty of it is there are no pumps. Sometimes people look at locks and think, wow, there must be a lot of water being pumped through.
Uh-huh.
It's all gravity fed. What we do is we'll allow water to fill into the uppermost lock, and then we'll shut the valve. We'll allow water to escape down into the lower lock, the next lower lock, until it's level. And then we can open a gate and slide the boat
going
through.
With it.
The boat goes down. And then we close the gate behind it, and we allow water to go to the next lower lock.
They did this by hand?
Yes. My understanding is it was one man per gate. Now, the gates weigh 10,000 pounds, and they're well balanced, but you're still pushing a gate through water. We typically use 2 to 3 people when we do our demonstrations.
How did you get involved with becoming a lock tender?
I used to work at a automotive plant here, Delphi it was called, and I worked with a gentleman who had passed away, but his widow was the director of the local historical society.
Oh.
They were obviously involved in the rehabilitation of the first set of locks. So she called me when it was time to do the dedication ceremony and said, could I get some engineers together and run the locks for the dedication ceremony? I think she figured engineers would know how to do it. So about half a dozen of us or so came down for the dedication ceremony in September of 2014.
Okay.
Originally, there were just two locks rehabilitated, one set of gates that we happened to be sitting next to here. And then after that, it was like, gee, Dave, could you come down and do one more demonstration? Sure. And then after that, through the winter, it was, could you do it in the summer, like every week? So we got a group of organized a group of people to come down, and we started doing it. And then from there, it became just my thing. And
yeah.
I got on the board of directors, and, you know, here I am.
Well, it's a huge destination now. It's like to come down and look at it is cool, but to actually see a demonstration in action, I think, is what really brings it home for everyone to help understand, right?
What's really gratifying to me is we make it a point to talk to visitors while we're doing demonstrations. And originally, most of the people I talked to had been to Niagara Falls, and they came here kind of as spillover.
What else do we do?
We got another lock day. We'll go see the locks. I've talked to quite a few people who specifically came here to see the locks.
Mm-hmm.
I actually talked to one woman last year, and I said, have you been to Niagara Falls? And her answer was, yeah, I don't know. I might go. I mean, she came here to see this.
Okay, so we got people on the boat. We got people pulling the boat. And the rest of you will just split up on one side or the other and manage the gates. The gates weigh 5 tons apiece, but they do move, so you can do it.
We just gotta get it cracked open.
Here we go, it's going. Watch your step.
Yep.
You're gonna float under the bridge. When you get near the bridge, he's gonna drop the lines down to you.
Okay.
Perfect.
Can you even imagine in your mind that very first day that a boat went through?
You know, no. I know how we felt when we put a boat through the first time on the rehabilitation of the locks, and I can't imagine how they felt, the pride they must have felt, especially the governor, because people basically downplayed the whole idea, thought he was crazy. Jefferson refused to finance it, so New York State had to finance it with the state. The federal government said, you're nuts, we're not going to do that. I mean, I can't imagine how proud they must have been.
What did the creation of the lock system along the canal do for our economy in the United States at the time?
Well, it just opened up the West, really. And through New York State, it created a lot of little boom towns like Lockport.
Mm.
Lockport had less than 300 people here when they started working on the locks. I mean, it created Lockport, and all along you can find canal towns. And what it did for shipping was, previously, if you wanted to get to the Midwest from Europe, you had to sail around Florida and come up the Mississippi through the port of New Orleans. So mm-hmm. It was a much longer voyage, and it was a much more dangerous voyage.
Right.
So now you could come through the port of New York, sail on relatively quiet waters right through into the Great Lakes and west. From New York to Buffalo, it cut travel time down from 6 weeks in a wagon to 1 week on a boat.
That was game-changing for our progress as a nation.
Oh, completely.
Mm-hmm.
Completely.
Doug Hartley is one of Dave's volunteer lock tenders and works on the maintenance of the Durham boat used in the historic lock demonstrations.
So that boat was a replica. It was rebuilt from basically old pictures and paintings and things of what they used to look like. It's one of the few that exists.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called the Erie Traveler. They built it at the Buffalo Maritime Center.
Mm.
Another guy that does the locks, Tom Glynn, was doing some work on that. And then he started working on the Seneca Chief. And he and I were talking, and that's how I got involved with Buffalo Maritime.
So a lot of folks have heard about the Seneca Chief, but mm-hmm. for those who have not,
yeah.
The Seneca Chief is what boat?
Seneca Chief is a replica boat of the boat that DeWitt Clinton took down the canal when it opened in 1825, and he did the marrying of the waters in New York. They traveled the canal every stop. They had festivals and stuff. So the Maritime Center had plans, I guess going back 10 years, that wanted to do it. And about 4 years ago, 5 years ago, actually got it going. The Maritime Center got funding to get it going. They hired a couple of shipwrights, and the rest of us were just volunteers from all walks of life. So I would go in, there'd be 10 or 12 of us. We're putting planks on the side. We're painting this. We're trimming this. You know, do you know how to do it? No. Okay, let me show you how to do it, or find someone who knew how to do it.
Yeah.
And then you started doing it. So the boat's finished now. Well, the outside, it floats. Let's put it that way. It's in the water and it floats.
Yeah.
This summer, we're going to...
What do they call it? Seaworthy?
Seaworthy,
it's seaworthy.
Yeah. In September, they're going to take the Seneca Chief down the canal for 30 days down to New York.
So they're going to start that in Buffalo.
Yep.
And they're going to come through here.
Come through the entire canal over the course of 30 days.
Wow.
And end up in New York.
And we happen to be doing this interview right now next to the historic Flight of Five, which how many? Is there two flights left or three?
There were two. And then when they expanded the barge canal, they had to take out the other set to put in the two locks, the two modern locks. And this is the only place that I know of where there's the old locks and the new locks in actual operation at the same location.
What do you hope people who come and see your demonstration here take away from this experience?
An appreciation for what came before.
Mm.
You know, the history, the ingenuity, you know, the making things, you're making it happen when nobody thought it could happen.
Close the gate. Close them up. Close them up.
Everything you see here is volunteer effort. I mean, the funding's all been volunteerism. You know, just the demonstrations, the cleanliness, the flowers on, you know, the canal, the market, everything is done by volunteers. None of this would be here other than just a spillway had that group not decided that we need to make something of this asset.
Feels like a town really owning its name.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Come on, you know that song.
Yeah.
She's a good old worker and a good old pal. 15 miles on the Erie Canal.
That wraps up this episode of Tapestry. Next week, we head to Southern Erie County to Springville, New York, where we'll visit a U-Pick flower farm, get a tour of Main Street indoors, and learn all about the public-private collaborative that is revitalizing Springville by putting arts front and center. What's happening in your town? Let us know by emailing tapestry@btpm.org. Tapestry is a production of Buffalo Toronto Public Media. You can listen to all our episodes at btpm.org or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm your host, Lynn Bader. Thanks for listening.